Well, it's been a quiet week. In Lake Wobegon, my own hometown, strange as that may seem to some of you, it being only 7 days before Christmas, lights still are not up on Main Street, nobody seems to be terribly excited about it, which seems strange to some people in Lake Wobegon. They say, well, it doesn't seem like it's 1 week before Christmas, does it? Nope, it doesn't. There's a calm about Christmas in Lake Wobegon, which is a calm that I used to think was caused by stupidity, but which is a calm that actually is a result of being in the right place and knowing it, and comes naturally to some people and has to be learned by others. And when I think of that calm in Lake Wobegon around Christmas, I think of a story that was told me by a guy I grew up with whose name was James Lundin. And I'm not sure I can tell it as well as he told it to me, but I'll try. Now James, we never called him Jim. He was always James for some reason, maybe because he was quiet, was the son of Mel Lundin, who was the mail carrier, who came down our road about 1:22 and a half p.m. every afternoon, Monday through Saturday, driving his old green Chevy, steering from the passenger side, which I thought was a great feat. Stopped by our mailbox, put in the mail, and roar off. And one day he didn't come, and we learned that he'd been hurt. Mel had been out in the country at his cousin's farm helping shingle the barn roof. And he was up on the scaffold when his cousin said, look, and Mel looked down and the cousin was pointing up, and he looked up and there was a great helium blimp floating across the sky. Mel stepped back to look at it and he plunged straight down and his head hit a concrete apron so hard that they heard it in the house. And they all came running out, and they thought he must be dead. Well, the Lundins, Mel and Clarice, and their 8 children lived in a little greenhouse, which was down just outside of town on the shore of the lake. A house that I remember being full of bunk beds and little kids. And the telephone rang there about the time she was reaching into the oven to pull out a macaroni and cheese hot dish and set it down on the table for supper where the children were sitting around. They weren't going to wait for Mel. She answered the phone, and the kids could tell right away from her silence and then from the tone in her voice that something terrible had happened, because her voice was so strong. You see, Clarice was always nervous. She's just a bag of nerves. She's always worrying about her kids, 8 of them, what they might be doing and what terrible things might be happening to them. And her kids knew how to make her nervous. And they enjoyed doing it. They'd say things like, say, Mom, do you know where my bike light is? I was going to go out biking on the... Well, never mind. I'll go without it. That's all right. And they'd go out the door. And she'd, no, come back. Don't. You haven't seen the life preservers, have you? We were going to go out and, well, we won't go far out. And they'd run out the door and she'd running after him in a flutter. Don't, no. Put on your life preservers. But now something terrible had happened. And her voice was absolutely strong. And she put the phone down. She turned to him and she said, your dad's been hurt and he's been taken to the hospital. And I'm going to go, and I will call you when I can. And she put on her coat and her scarf, and she went next door to the neighbors to borrow the car. And in she went. Kids just sat there, couldn't eat, couldn't talk, couldn't do anything. The dad had fallen, and for all they knew, he might be dead. They didn't know. Well, this was in late November. He didn't die. But he was in the hospital for almost 4 weeks. And during those weeks, in the early part of December, Clarice took the kids aside one by one, not once but several times, and she spoke to him and she said, I want you to know that we may not be able to afford much Christmas this year. So I don't want you to get your hopes up. We just may not have the money to have any Christmas. Well, the little kids didn't really understand that because they didn't think of Christmas as something that you afforded or not. I mean, it just was. Christmas just happened. Stuff appeared on Christmas with your name on it. They didn't know it involved money. But James knew. James knew. And his face burned when she told him that not to get his hopes up. They might not be able to afford it. Because his hopes were up to where he couldn't bring them down anymore. See, he'd been dropping hints for about 6 months, campaigning for a Lionel model train in the Ward's Christmas catalog from the year before. A model train with a locomotive and four cars and a caboose and two switches and a depot with a station master who would come out and raise the semaphore automatically just as the train was approaching, and a little livestock loader that when the cattle car would pull up next to this livestock loader, the little cattle would move up the ramp and into the cattle car and all go in there, and then the door would close and train go off. It was amazing. What a wonderful thing. And he wanted it so bad that he could not imagine not getting it, much as he tried. He thought, as the days went by, that maybe some rich person would have read the story about his dad's accident in the Herald Star. And the rich person would think, well, I'm going to see that those kids get the biggest, best Christmas they've ever had and go out and buy them a lot of stuff. And wondered if maybe he ought to write a letter to the Herald Star in case there were a rich person out there who wanted to give these kids the biggest, best Christmas they ever had, to let them know exactly how he could do that with the purchase of a Lionel model train set. Well, he didn't. It was a hard time. Clarice was gone about half the time, off to the hospital, which was in St. Cloud. She often stayed overnight when Mel was feeling bad. The oldest girl, Betty, had to pretty well take care of the others, but she couldn't really do it. A couple of the youngest kids had to be farmed out to relatives. Neighbors came in to bring food and bring a little pity, you know, which you get tired of pretty quickly. Relatives come and visit. And one night, James was lying in bed and he heard his sister crying in the bed. And he asked her what was wrong. And she had to repeat it a few times before he could understand what she was saying. But she said, Dad's never coming back. We're going to be adopted. Suddenly he thought about it. He had considered being adopted now and then in the past. Maybe being adopted by a rich person who loved trains. Had a big layout down the basement, and who liked kids, but the actual prospect of it scared him. To go off with somebody else, pack his bags and go off with somebody else, and be their son, and change his name, and be a different person, was frightening. Would he have to go with his Uncle Al and his Aunt Agnes, who lived in the cities and who'd come up to visit him once? And she'd walked into the house and sat down in a chair and kind of looked around at their messy house and sniffed and sort of held her hands on her lap, kind of afraid that something would touch her. Would he have to go with them? One Sunday at church, he saw back on the table where the hymn books were, he saw a shoebox with a hole in the top. And on the side it said, Lundeen Family Christmas Fund. And he was so ashamed. When everybody was down in the basement having coffee after church, he came up and he took it and he hid it in the cloakroom so nobody would ever give it to him. Well, Mel came back. He came back 2 days before Christmas. He was kind of thin and he was kind of weak and he got dizzy when he walked, but he was back home. He spent most of the day lying on the couch in the living room. And they had some kind of Christmas. They had a little tree, not a big one, a little one up on the coffee table with lights on it. And there were some presents, there weren't many. James got a new pair of boots and a hunting knife and a game of stadium checkers. And Mel managed to pass out all the gifts, just as he'd always done. Though, of course, they all realized that he was the real gift. He was the gift. It was a very cold Christmas, and there was a lot of snow on the ground. And out on the lake, it had blown up into great drifts, and a hard crust was on it, so you could walk on top of the crust. And just as it was starting to get dark, he put on his new boots, and he walked out across the lake, walking on the drifts like walking on waves of water. And walked all the way to the other side of the lake and turned around to walk back and saw his house, his little house, tiny lights, and the little town behind it and some lights up on the hill, and felt as if he was standing in a Lionel model train layout. A marvelous layout with realistic snow and little sponge trees that looked real and houses with lights in them that looked so real. One of those perfect model train layouts that when you sit down and put your face down by it, you feel like that's the whole world right there. And that's what he felt. That this was the whole world right in front of him. And that Christmas was what was in that house. Whatever they did in that house, that was Christmas. And all of the other things that he thought were Christmas were not really. Christmas was in that house. And that as long as they were all there together, that would be all that they would need. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children be above average.